KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Ramon.
Larkspur in Marin County.
Simpson Beach.
I live in Noe Valley in Nevada.
Coming up, a team of San Francisco public defenders fight for undocumented people to stay in the country.
Most people wonder, like, oh, you work for the government, so you work for ICE. And I explain to them, no, I get paid by the San Francisco government to fight the federal government. So I am on your side.
And why these lawyers say the rules of immigration court are stacked against them.
The law should be applied faithfully, but it's not. It's always like, how can we deport this person faster? You know, and that's wrong.
Today on Cross Currents, our immigration reporter Nina Gensler-Debs and justice reporter Holly J. McDeed bring us stories from San Francisco's Immigration Defense Unit. We'll begin the show with Nina right after this news. Stay tuned.
Eliodoro Moreno has had a big day. A big few months, actually. This summer, he took a job as a San Francisco public defender. Today, he's just finished a hearing at immigration court, trying to prevent the deportation of his client.
I think I could have been a little bit more succinct in my closing, but I think I got all my points out.
You can tell Eliodoro is meticulous just by looking at him. Every hair is carefully combed and gelled into place. He's the kind of guy you can imagine compulsively polishing his glasses. Eliodoro has spent hours poring over this case.
I think I gave the judge a roadmap, which is what I wanted to do, about how she could grant this case.
His client, Rosa, not her real name, was convicted for a crime here in the United States. She was picked up by ICE agents while serving her sentence in prison. Rosa came to California years ago to escape a violent childhood in Mexico. Eliodoro hopes that the judge, Valerie Birch, will say that Rosa should not be deported to Mexico because her life would be in danger there. He's expecting the judge's decision in the mail.
I'm hoping within the next week or two at the most.
Eliodoro is one of eight public defenders who focus on representing detained immigrants. They all check in a lot.
Congratulations. Congrats on finishing. Do you think it's a grant?
This kind of message is standard. All the attorneys cheerlead for each other. But then Eliodoro gets a text he is not expecting about the judge.
FYI, she's been taking 45 to 60 days for written decision in a lot of cases.
Holy shit. Oh, I did not want to hear that. What?
Here's the thing. His client, Rosa, is in a detention center, and she's been locked up between prison and detention for 18 months. She gave birth to one of her children while behind bars. She has to wait there while the judge decides, and Rosa is at the end of her rope.
Oh, no.
I'm going to have to tell her that my presumption was incorrect, which is not going to be good news for her. Okay, well, I'll have to deal with that.
Rosa keeps saying maybe she should just take the deportation just to get out of detention. Eliodoro says that many of his clients get to a point where they'll choose anything over staying locked up.
When you have someone who's so desperate and detained and tired of it, away from their family, it's difficult to see any light out at the end of the tunnel. And that's especially true as in every area of law where you can't guarantee success.
And you really can't guarantee success for defendants in immigration law. Nationally, only around 20% of detained immigrants avoid deportation when they have representation. With no lawyer, that number goes down to just 2%. But Eliodoro and his colleagues, known as the Immigration Defense Unit, they help their clients avoid deportation nearly 40% of the time, higher than the national average. And here in San Francisco, they take the cases most other lawyers won't.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. You just heard immigration reporter Nina Gensler-Debs. She and our justice reporter, Holly J. McDeed, spent this year following attorneys with the San Francisco Immigration Defense Unit. It's a team of eight lawyers with the Public Defender's Office who represent people threatened with deportation. When San Francisco's Immigration Defense Unit started last year, there were only two other outfits like it in the country. These lawyers defend people whose cases feel like long shots. They're immigrants. Some have criminal convictions. Some can't afford lawyers or can't find attorneys willing to take the chance and represent them. Most detained immigrants don't have attorneys at all. In criminal proceedings, when someone goes to court, they're guaranteed the right to an attorney and a speedy trial under the Constitution. But immigration hearings are not criminal trials, because being unlawfully present in the United States is not actually a crime. And so detained immigrants don't get those rights. Here's Holly.
If you've seen or heard of Francisco Ugarte at all, it's probably because of the shooting of Kate Steinle. Steinle was fatally shot in the back while walking with her dad along the Embarcadero waterfront in 2015. And Francisco was one of the lawyers representing the man charged with the shooting, an undocumented man from Mexico named Jose Inez Garcia Zarate. Then presidential nominee Donald Trump used the shooting to demand a border wall and slam San Francisco sanctuary city policies.
First of all, you know, Kate, magnificent Kate, shot in the back by and killed in San Francisco, sanctuary city. Can you believe I have property in San Francisco?
And when his client was found not guilty in 2017, Francisco spoke during a press conference, looking exhausted and eyes focused directly at the camera. If you've met him in real life, you'd know he's a soft-spoken man who can maintain eye contact for an unnervingly long time.
I believe today is a vindication for the rights of immigrants. Nothing about Mr. Garcia Zarate's ethnicity, nothing about his immigration status, nothing about the fact that he is born in Mexico had any relevance as to what happened on July 1st, 2015.
Fox News personality Laura Ingraham called out Francisco on national television.
Oh, my God. I can't even believe those words were said by that man. It is breathtaking on almost every level.
For Francisco, it doesn't matter what his clients were arrested for. Everyone deserves legal defense.
Public defenders are there and they stand up for people and defend their humanity regardless of the kind of, crime that they're charged with.
For roughly a decade, Francisco has represented undocumented immigrants who don't make the news. As an immigration lawyer, he argues that people have the right to stay in the United States in spite of their criminal history. Without lawyers, immigrants need to make that argument before a judge themselves. In 2008, a surge of immigration enforcement led to more and more immigrants showing up in court without attorneys.
And so that led to a crisis in our communities. We saw, fathers, mothers, ripped apart from their kids in the United States. People have been living here for many, many years.
So immigration lawyers, activists, and faith leaders decided to act. They demanded universal representation for people in immigration courts, meaning every defendant gets a lawyer. Over the next few years, activists protested, packed courtrooms, and raised funds for people who couldn't afford bond. By 2014, Francisco was hired as the first immigration attorney with the San Francisco Public Defender's Office.
Fast forward to 2016, Donald Trump is elected president on a platform of mass deportation.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
So Francisco and other attorneys pushed the city to hire more immigration attorneys at the public defender's office. He says at first, there was resistance among city leaders.
In San Francisco, there was trepidation that if the public defender's office was to be involved in removal defense, that we would be supporting, representing people with criminal convictions. And that was something that they didn't want to do.
But under public pressure, city officials agreed to hire more immigration lawyers. The San Francisco Immigration Defense Unit was launched last year. Unlike most lawyers, attorneys with the San Francisco Immigration Defense Unit are unusual in that they don't screen clients. Instead, they show up at immigration court, figure out who needs an attorney.
Whoever is unrepresented that day on their master calendar hearing, we will offer representation for that person, regardless of the quote-unquote merits of the case.
So far this year, the unit has represented 173 detained immigrants. On average, there are nearly 10 times that many immigrants still waiting for their day in San Francisco's immigration court. And those who have access to lawyers are much more likely to win. Thank you.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney in for Hanna Baba. Here in San Francisco, detained immigrants with attorneys are 7 times more likely to be allowed to stay in the United States than those who don't have attorneys at all. But defense attorneys working on these cases are up against a complicated and difficult system. Some people call immigration court kangaroo court because it can feel lawless. Remember, it doesn't have the same constitutional protections as criminal court. Lawyers need to navigate a web of bureaucracy dictated by the Justice Department, which answers to the president. And immigration policy has been constantly changing under the Trump administration. Nina and Holly learn from one attorney on the Immigration Defense Unit what it takes to effectively represent their clients in this world.
San Francisco's Immigration Defense Unit on 7th and Bryant Streets is your standard office with cubicles side by side.
I'll send you this memo template that I'm going to create.
This is a nice fax you did, Hector.
Oh, beautiful. I love it.
Except the space comes with a fight against the machine kind of twist. There are posters of revolutionaries like Emiliano Zapata and Che Guevara on the walls. Attorney Gabriela Redesno cheers another lawyer on for filing a lawsuit against the Justice Department.
Yeah. You're suing the government, Hector?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Gabriela passed her bar exam in May, got a job here as an immigration lawyer 1 week later. Before this gig, Gabriela worked on the criminal defense side of the public defender's office. She has a photo of her aunt, also a public defender, framed at her desk.
I am a public defender at heart. There's no case that I wouldn't defend. There's no charge I wouldn't defend. I think that you can find humanity in everyone. It's whether or not you take the time and have the patience to do so.
We've seen her in the courtroom. She's passionate. She argues for forgiveness and second chances in a way anyone could understand. Here at the office, she fills out paperwork, creates templates, and swears. A lot. She has dozens of folders, jam-packed with research, lining the shelves behind her desk. There are files inside of files, documents holding her clients' life stories.
I feel like I killed a tree this week, and I'm really upset about it.
A big part of Gabriela's job is gathering enough evidence to convince the judge that deporting people back to where they're from will likely get them hurt, tortured, or killed. Gabriela's grandparents came to the United States from El Salvador, a country that many of her clients don't want to go back to. One of her clients, a 73-year-old grandpa, reminds her of them.
I love old people, and I love his case so much, and I want to win his case so badly. I'm going to be really depressed if I lose that case, like real depressed.
Whew. But Gabriela says often her relationships with her clients can feel impersonal and disconnected. Most of her clients are sitting in detention centers far away. Some are 3 hours north in Yuba County. Others are about 5 hours south in Bakersfield. One client is even detained in Colorado. So seeing your clients in person is really rare.
I can't sit next to them. I can't show them things without asking for permission or having a glass wall in between us.
So from miles away, Gabriela has to introduce herself and earn trust over the telephone and explain that she wants to represent people for free.
And most people wonder, like, oh, you work for the government, so you work for ICE. And I explain to them, no, I get paid by the San Francisco government to fight the federal government. So I am on your side.
Gabriela sees herself as one of the last lines of defense against the federal deportation machine. But that requires navigating a lot of bureaucracy. Even arranging phone calls to talk to her clients is complicated.
Hello, this is Gabriela.
Hi, Veronica. I appreciate you sending me this information. Okay, the problem is that I am a pro bono attorney.
She's told that she will have to pay a fee if she wants to talk to her client who is detained in Colorado. He was in Richmond, California, until all immigrants detained in that jail were transferred out.
Okay, well, thank you for this information. I appreciate the call. You too. Bye. Such bullshit, man. This whole Colorado thing was a nightmare.
Part of the nightmare, she says, is having to fill out paperwork for every mundane thing. When ICE makes so many requests, she says, it's inevitable that some of those requests will get lost.
But the other part of the nightmare is the constant dysfunction in the courtroom. Like, take this bond hearing Gabriela has with one of her clients, who we're calling Juan. He has multiple DUI convictions and might be deported. We aren't allowed to record in court, but we can tell you it was not organized. First, the judge calls the wrong detention center. After that, it takes several attempts before the call actually goes through. When Juan finally appears on the video screen, Gabriela argues he deserves to get out on bond. She says he'll enroll in a treatment program. But the judge is not convinced that after five DUIs, he changed now. I don't believe you, the judge says. She denies his bond. Afterwards, Gabriela heads to a private room to debrief with Juan.
I'm disappointed. I feel very tired.
He says that even though he's disappointed, it matters to him that he has a lawyer.
And guess what? I'm not paying not even one penny to her. That's amazing. It's the first time ever in my life that somebody's doing for me for free. First time in my life. So this has to be a sign from God.
Gabriela reminds him, even though he's not out on bond, he's not deported yet.
Like I said, we can be sad today, but tomorrow we fight.
Yes.
Back at the office, Carla Gomez, an attorney with the unit, drops by to talk about Gabriela's first major win. That was a huge deal.
We were just so excited. Jenna actually went and got her flowers at the Flower Mart, and then
she
we
made
went
a
and
sign.
She made her a sign. You won.
Carla says even convincing immigration judges to give you more time to work on a case is considered a victory. Because of new quotas from the Trump administration, a single immigration judge is required to complete 700 cases in a year. So they're hesitant to slow down cases even more.
But it feels sustainable?
No. But somehow, this kind of work never feels sustainable. But you just have to really enjoy the moments when you're not slammed.
Carla heads off to court, and Gabriela promises to light a candle for her.
That was my grandma's response for everything. Light a candle. You worried? Light a candle.
Does it work?
Yeah.
Another attorney jokes that if candles are good luck, this unit will need an entire altar.
We do need one. Are you kidding me?
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents, reported by KALW's Holly J. McDeed and Nina Gensler-Debs. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hanna Baba. No matter how many candles they light, the attorneys of the Immigration Defense Unit know that the odds are stacked against them. At the beginning of today's show, we heard from attorney Eliodoro Moreno, who's representing Rosa, not a real name, a woman who doesn't want to be deported, but is even more desperate to get out of detention. Throughout this case, Eliodoro has had to help Rosa understand that some pain and suffering now could mean a better future for her. We'll return one more time to Holly and Nina's reporting.
Eliodoro Moreno tells us he's annoyed at the idea of a cookie-cutter image of all public defenders. If you've pictured a bleeding-heart liberal who sees himself locked in an epic battle fighting the man, that's not him.
I describe myself as a moderate. I was in the military.
Eliodoro served in the Marine Corps in Iraq and Afghanistan and says he loved it.
I think there's a line for me. Like, when people say I believe in open borders, I cringe. I don't believe in open borders. I mean, maybe that's the military in me, but I have pride in the U.S. and being American and the whole deal.
He thinks the immigration system is deeply flawed, but he does believe in a system.
I don't want to destroy the system. I want to make sure that our clients are able to successfully navigate it to remain here because I think they deserve to remain here. I mean, and then their rights being violated, I don't like that. You know, people should have the right to remain here and the law should be applied faithfully, but it's not. It's always like, how can we deport this person faster? You know, and that's wrong.
With Rosa's case, he's convinced that she should not be deported, even if she is undocumented, even if she has been convicted of a crime. Eliodoro believes that her life would be endangered by going back.
In 2017, Rosa served 11 months in prison for helping an undocumented friend buy fake documents. Social Security cards, legal permanent residency cards, that kind of thing. ICE picked her up from prison and brought her to a detention center. The day before her big hearing with the judge, we talked to Rosa on the phone. She told us about ICE taking her into custody.
Pues fue muy difícil porque...
It was very difficult for me, she says. I have a 10-month-old daughter and a 5-year-old daughter, and I was expecting when I got out of custody I was going to be with them, but I wasn't. Rosa expected to be deported, she says, but then she met Eliodoro Moreno. For me, he's an angel, Rosa says. Eliodoro convinced her to fight the deportation order. Because she was abused back in Mexico, Eliodoro said that they would try to convince the judge to issue something called a withholding of removal, so that legally the United States could not send her back. But that means Rosa has to talk about some of the most painful moments of her life.
Para mí es muy difícil estar recordando todo lo que he pasado.
It's very difficult for me to remember everything that happened, she says. I'm trying to stay relaxed and calm.
Solo he tratado de tratar de permanecer calmada.
Off the phone, Eliodoro tells us that clients like Rosa remind him of his mom, which makes the work feel that much more emotional.
I'm a son of a Mexican immigrant family who were undocumented at one point. My mother raised 4 kids pretty much on her own here, and you know, she had to go through a lot.
Eliodoro says his parents came to the U.S. with a 6th-grade education and worked hard so that he and his siblings could have a better life. They got legal permanent residency in the mid-80s when President Ronald Reagan signed a bill into law that granted amnesty to 3 million undocumented people. Eliodoro tells us that he started doing immigration law as a way to give back to his community. He was at a private firm for years, but
as soon as the prior presidential election occurred, I felt like I needed to move somewhere else to make more impact, especially for detained individuals.
Individuals like Rosa.
On the day of the hearing, Eliodoro is nervous. Before going into court, he's talking a mile a minute.
So we're going to go in there. The judge is going to make sure that everyone has everything that's been submitted in the case, ask if anything else needs to be submitted.
Today, he'll have to prove to Judge Valerie Birch that Rosa should not be deported back to Mexico because she'll be in danger there.
It's courtroom number one.
Number one.
Yeah,
okay.
All the way to the end.
We're not allowed to record in the courtroom. So here's the scene. There are 4 people. The defense, Eliodoro Moreno, the prosecutor from the Department of Homeland Security, a translator, and Judge Valerie Birch. Rosa joins by video conference from Sacramento. The camera is pointed down at her. She looks dazed. The hearing is 4 hours long. Eliodoro's questions are unsparing about Rosa's stepfather's sexual abuse and mother's physical abuse. When did the abuse start? As far back as I can remember. What did your mother hit you with? A belt, a sandal, anything she could find. How often would she hit you? 4 to 5 times per week.
After she came to California, Rosa started dating Luis, also not his real name, and she got pregnant. One night he came home in a drunken rage and punched her over and over in the stomach. 2 days later, she miscarried the baby. At this point in the hearing, it's 5 p.m., and the judge says the case will have to be extended to another day. Eliodoro hasn't even gotten to the most decisive moment in Rosa's testimony.
We want to pause here for a moment and acknowledge this is all painful to watch. Rosa hates retelling her story over and over. It's re-traumatizing and exhausting. But Eliodoro is convinced it's the best shot she has at staying here.
A week later, we're all back in court. Rosa says after the miscarriage, she and her boyfriend Luis broke up, but he kept harassing her, even after he went back to Mexico, where he's from. He sent a threatening message to Rosa's brother through the Zetas, a Mexican drug cartel.
Basically, Eliodoro's argument is this. If Rosa goes back to Mexico, she'll be in danger from her family and from Luis and the Zetas. The prosecutor argues that Luis and the Zetas probably won't be able to find Rosa. And it's unlikely that her parents will abuse her now that she's an adult.
As we leave court, Eliodoro tells us he's got a good vibe from the judge. For over 2 weeks, he checks the status of the case online every day. And then the decision comes earlier than expected.
And it said, you know, judge denied applications for relief.
Rosa lost. The judge acknowledges that, yes, Rosa was abused as a child. And yes, the Zetas are a dangerous cartel. But she also says that the prosecution proved that Rosa was unlikely to face harm in the future.
Eliodoro does not accept the judge's decision. He thinks they could win an appeal, but Rosa is not willing to appeal if it means staying in detention during the process, away from her kids. So Eliodoro and Rosa make a deal. If Rosa can get out on bond, they'll fight. If not, she'll accept the judge's decision and go to Mexico.
It might seem strange for lawyers to be convincing clients to accept their services to stay and fight. But Eliodoro and the other attorneys from the Immigration Defense Unit say clients are exhausted and fed up. They don't have the energy to really think through all their options. Eliodoro and the other lawyers believe the detainees need someone to give them the strength to at least get in front of a judge and have their day in court, even if they have very little hope of winning.
2 weeks ago, Rosa had a bond hearing in front of another judge, and she won. Now, she's back with her kids as she and Eliodoro prepare her appeals, which could take years to process. So, Eliodoro and the Immigration Defense Unit have a win today. But what's ahead for him, the whole team, and their clients, is years of work. And statistically, the prospect of any win is still unlikely. In San Francisco, I'm Nina Gensler-Debs.
And I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
You can share that story from Holly and Nina by following us on Twitter and Facebook at CrossCurrentsFM. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter so you can get all our stories straight to your inbox. Now, today's our final Cross Currents of 2018, and you may have noticed we began the show with a bit of a different sound. We're taking a two-week winter break, but when the show returns on January 7th, we'll be experimenting with more changes like these: new music, new segments, and show formats. We're excited to switch things up while continuing to bring you timely, informative, and joyful stories about our community.